Well, here's another meeting with Jesus. Well, it didn't start off quite as a meeting. We're reading from Mark's Gospel, chapter 15 and verse 21. Then they took Jesus out to crucify him. A man called Simon from Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way in from the country, and they pressed him into service to carry his cross. They brought him to the place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull. He was offered drugged wine, but he would not take it. Then they fastened him to the cross. They divided his clothes among them, casting lots to decide what each should have. The hour of the crucifixion was 9 in the morning, and the inscription giving the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." Two bandits were crucified with him, one on his right and the other on his left. Simon of Cyrene. Not a lot's known about Simon of Cyrene, and yet he seems to haunt the New Testament writings. He's often identified with the Simon mentioned in Acts 13. In the church at Antioch, there were some prophets and teachers: Barnabas, Simon called the Black, Lucius from Cyrene, Manaen, who had been brought up with Herod the governor, and Saul. He's mentioned there, Simon the Black. Paul sends special greetings to Simon of Cyrene's son, Rufus, who we heard of here, as Simon was the father of Alexander of Rufus. In Romans 16, he says, "I send greetings to Rufus, that outstanding worker in the Lord's service, and to his mother, who has always treated me as her son." Presumably in the time of Paul in Antioch. Paul's letter that we've quoted here was written for the church in Rome, as was Mark's gospel that we've just read from. So Mark makes a similar reference to Simon and his sons, knowing they will be known by Mark's Roman audience. Mark 15, Simon was from Cyrene and was the father of Alexander and Rufus. So clearly, Simon the Black of Cyrene became an influential figure in the rise of the early church. Yet, how did he become a Christian? Not by free choice, it seems. His path did not meet or cross the path of Jesus. Rather, it ran parallel to it. As Jesus was struggling through the streets and through the city gate to Golgotha, Simon seems to have been an onlooker walking parallel on the pavement while, as it were, Jesus travelled the roadway. Until, exasperated by the delays caused by Jesus' repeated falls, a Roman soldier cries out, "Oi, you, carry this bloke's cross. Hurry up, yeah, you!" Whatever had caused Simon to walk parallel, sympathy, voyeurism, inquisitiveness, accident, he was now no longer parallel. He was at right angles. Now, his path in taking the cross had crossed the path of Christ. "If anyone wants to be a disciple of mine," said Jesus, "let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." This is the voluntary receiving of Christ. Here, God so designs matters that Simon carries out Jesus' invitation not by choice, but by force. So often in the Christian life, or indeed in any gathering, from the Women's Institute through the golf club to our family circle, we want the one who joins to first behave, then to believe and trust, and finally, we might let them belong. We want compliance with our culture and its rules. Behave. Then we want believing conviction in that culture. Believe. And if you can put those two in, Well, then we'll admit you and make you feel you belong. God and the art of evangelism and mission seems to work entirely the other way round. We give you the sense you belong. Soon you start to understand and catch belief. And finally, our conduct alters according to the grace within us. We behave. Almost against his best judgment, Simon belonged. How many men in particular find admission to faith and the church community easier if they're asked to help in some practical way first? Could we have your advice on this? Oh, we don't know how to do this. Could you help? Here the person retains dignity and usefulness, one of the hang-ups we men have, and then slowly finding we belong, we start to believe, and then to behave. Simon was coming into the city from the country, the scripture says, in a parallel but opposite direction to Jesus, who was going out of the city into the country. And the soldiers forced Simon to carry Jesus' cross. It doesn't end there, does it? What do you think of drug addicts, criminals, prostitutes, Muslim extremists? We criticize them from the sidelines. We walk parallel to them, but in the opposite direction, and demonize them. But if by free will or force of circumstance our paths cross, and we have to carry their cross, we come at matters from a different perspective. At Maidstone Prison, I met a man serving a life sentence for murder. I categorized him on my way from outside prison and coming into it. But as we talked, I began to handle his cross. He painted some ginormous pictures of great quality, which, as far as I know, still hang on the prison walls inside the prison. They depict scenes from the life of Christ. And for Christ, and for most of his disciples and others portrayed in the pictures, he used the faces of the prison governor, chaplain, other inmates, and so on. But in every single painting, the face of Judas Iscariot is his own face. He believed in his crime and in his life, that he'd betrayed God. Outside the ships in Cardiff Docks in early morning, I picked up the local prostitutes from the ships and took them to the bus terminus by the dock gates 2 miles away. I categorized them. My mother had told me to keep away from their kind when I left home in Yorkshire to go down to Cardiff. Until I touched their crosses, until I saw them spend their last earnings to feed an old man in a cafe, until I tried to help them sort out their eviction notices from unscrupulous landlords. Someone has said, the more a man understands, the more he forgives. We can perhaps sense Simon of Cyrene's thinking. Who was this scoundrel who claimed to be king of the Jews, this traitor? Then, oi you, carry his cross, quick about it. And it doesn't stop there, does it? I'm sure Simon didn't want to be forced by the soldiers from an occupying power to carry a condemned man's execution equipment. Sometimes our paths cross with things we'd rather not have happened. That job we'd long for, but never got. The redundancy notice served on us. The hope of fame that was never realized. The pots of gold we nearly had, but somehow they passed us by. The moment of unrequited love. The death of one of the security givers of our lives. We end up picking up a cross we never wanted. And yet sometimes these have been the moments that have changed our lives and enabled us to grow. I usually do my prayers in the morning and evening sitting in the chair up there. and I have a little book given to me earlier, and in the front of it, I've got an extract from G.N. Darby's Bible, and he quotes a phrase from 1 Kings chapter 12. I look at it from time to time when I'm not feeling too happy and I'm depressed, and it says, "This thing is from me." Darby wrote this in the front of his Bible. "The disappointments of life are in reality only the decrees of love. I have a message for you today, my child. I will whisper it softly in your ear in order that the storm clouds which appear may be gilt with glory and that the thorns on which you may have to walk may be blunted. The message is short, a tiny sentence, but allow it to sink into the depths of your heart and to be to you a cushion on which to rest your weary head. It is, 'This thing is from me.' Have you never thought that all which concerns you concerns me also? He who touches you touches the apple of my eye. You've been precious in my eyes. That's why I take a special interest in your upbringing. When temptation assails you, I wish you to know that this thing is from me. Have you money difficulties? This thing is from me, for I am he who possesses all things. I wish you to draw everything from me. Depend on me. Have you desired fervently to do some great work for me? Instead of that, you've been laid aside on a bed of sickness and suffering. This thing is from me. I was unable to attract your attention while you were so active. It's only those who have learnt to wait patiently who can serve me. Are you suddenly called to occupy a difficult position, full of responsibilities? Go forward, counting on me. The sting will go in the measure in which you see me in all things. Are you passing through a night of affliction? This thing is from me. I have left you without human support, that in turning to me, you might obtain eternal consolation. Has some friend disappointed you? This thing is from me, so you may learn that your best friend is Jesus. Has someone said false things of you? Come under my wings, away from the place of worldly dispute. Remember, you are but an instrument, not an agent." So the "I didn't choose that, you made me do it, God" moments are for the good. Simon of Cyrene was the father of Alexandra and Rufus, that outstanding worker in the Lord's service. Belonging, believing, behaving. And all because, in an involuntary way, his path had met with that of Christ.